And this is America's Heroes Group. I'm Cliff Kelly, along with my co-host, Colonel Dr. Damon Arnold. Our executive producer, of course, is Glenda Smith. Our digital media producer is Manny Polizzari. And our assistant digital media producer is Titus Williams. And we are continuing the show. And by the way, your call-in number, 773-591-1690. We've been having some great guests on talking about some things that we really need to know about. And it's America's Heroes Group Roundtable with Partner Service, mm-hmm. Women Who Serve. And we have Diana Danis, mm-hmm. a U.S. Army veteran, a national advocate and activist on women veteran issues, lead administrator of social media service, of course, Women Who Serve. And she is with us. And also we're going to talk with Octavia Harris, retired U.S. Navy Command Master Chief. This is great. Diana tells us what we need to know. This is going to be great.
So Colonel, confronting, right, the discussion is going to be centering around confronting minority and special populations of women who serve, with emphasis on racism, sexism, and suicidality. Okay, Diana, please tell us what you need. What we need to know about these topics. They're really important.
I think that right now, and you know, Sister Soldier went through this just briefly. We're just not getting enough women in the key capacities, and we're over half the population. Now in the military, we're fewer, and we're getting to be more and more. But as the Secretary of Defense recently said, and it took him a while to figure it out, most of us have known this for a long time, that women and minorities in the military just don't get promoted at the rate that our male counterparts do, and who are white. And, you know, people can say, hey, if you're a PFC, you get the same pay, you get the same food. Well, that may be true, except you don't get the same opportunities. You don't get selected for general staff college. You don't get the same opportunities to move up into the same rank structures. And, you know, it's one of the examples that I use very often is the handful of people that do get those shots have done 10 times more work. So when you look at somebody like Octavia, you know, who is a command master chief, that doesn't happen very often. Mm-hmm. And the work you have to put in to get there, as you gentlemen both know, is just beyond and above everything that everybody else had to do. It's like we've heard this before, you know, women have to do it in high heels backwards. And so if you happen to be somebody who is a woman of color and, you know, so you're dealing with the gender issue, you're dealing with the color issue, and you may be dealing with other issues as well. And so I always give women that extra credit there. Mm-hmm. I give people of color extra credit. Mm-hmm. And so we're fighting a lot of issues. Now you deal with something like COVID. You deal with people being in lockdown, and you're dealing with suicide. I mean, we've all been trying to fight this for years and years and years. Why are our young people mm-hmm. offing themselves? Well, if your choice comes down to, well, do I reenlist and deal with a toxic command that is ignoring my skill sets or won't give me a chance, or I've been assaulted and they won't listen to me and they won't give me an opportunity? Right. Or do I leave the military? So do I reenlist, do I leave, or do I off myself because the private sector doesn't offer me opportunities because the job market is in a free fall? I can't translate my skills from the military, or do I just give up? And that's what's happening a lot. And mm-hmm. we're trying to figure it out. And people like Octavia have... Is Octavia on now?
Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Octavia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Octavia's done a lot of really important work, and she's done something in addition to all the incredible stuff of 30 years of service. Mm. And she survived Texas, which, by the way, is an amazing feat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, a black woman in Texas is just like, hey, girl.
Yeah.
So she's just going away, but she is she served on the Defense Advisory Committee of Women in the Services, and she also chairs the VA Advisory Committee on Women Veterans. So she's also done something amazing in serving in both of those bodies, which almost nobody has accomplished. And that gives her a unique insight into how do we look at suicidology in an environment like the VA that can't keep a handle on sexual harassment for its own employees, much less for those of us who go in there for care. And some of those employees are also disabled veterans in the ranks.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have this transition of people from the military then going into the VA, some of them as employees. So we're dealing with people who may have confronted suicide in the military. Maybe they survived it. And now they've gone into an environment in the VA where they can't deal with their own harassment issues. And now they may be facing suicide. And suicide, as both of you gentlemen know, is a problem in the military. It's a problem in the VA. Octavia's been dealing with both of these issues in trying to address them from both of these committees trying to put together programs. And so, you know, this is Suicide Prevention Month. It's a big deal. There's a lot of stuff going on. Congress is doing a lot of stuff. They're putting together programs both out of DOD and the VA. And so, you know, I toss it to Octavia just to kind of give some of her thoughts about what this looks like from her perspective.
Well, thank you, Diana, and definitely thank you for your kind words. And I appreciate being on the show.
We appreciate having you both. Go right ahead.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You know, from my perspective as a woman veteran, I will tell you, of course, I can't speak for Secretary of Department of Defense or the VA. But looking at what they're trying to do with these committees that they've empowered to look at these issues, is telling us that, hey, you know, we want you to give us advice on what you think we can do with these issues. Clearly, there is a huge problem with suicide. The women's suicide rate has skyrocketed, and the homelessness rate has skyrocketed. And so when you touch on what's been going on, COVID, for example, the COVID pandemic has disproportionately affected the Black and Hispanic communities. Mm-hmm. Now, when you compound that with other issues that were happening before the pandemic, you know, that makes it worse. And unfortunately, even on the healthcare DOV side and the VA medical side, a lot of things have shifted to where there's a lot of telehealth. There's not a lot of availability because people don't want folks gathering in medical clinics. So it's been a challenge since COVID to get a lot of care. So you're relying on who can I get a hold of, you know, on the phone to get whatever care I need. And so it's already hard, you know, when you're dealing with these issues, whether you're on active duty, reserve, or guard, or whether you're in a veteran status. So imagine everything that Diana just said, and now you feel even more isolated. So I think COVID is going to give us more challenges on how to come up with recommendations and programs to help, because these military members, veterans, they're going to need a lot more help as we move forward. And so when we look at, on either committee, when we look at each population, you know, I think the challenge is similar. Even though on active duty, yes, they are, whether they are on a ship or in a battalion, it doesn't matter. They are still facing those issues that they see going on outside. Those things still touch them because their families are, you know, across the United States. The veterans are out of the military and they can't get jobs because everything's closed or shut down, gone out of business. And they are dealing with those problems. So that leads us to the suicide issues. Women's suicide rate is the highest rate of suicide, the women veterans. And that ties in a lot with sexual harassment, military sexual trauma. And so how do we wrap our arms around this? This is a serious problem. And so, you know, to have these committees assigned to look at these things, I think that's a great idea. So having these committees hopefully will make a difference because these are serious problems that are getting worse.
Well, that's what I was just going to ask. We're so pleased that you're talking about this. But is there something that's being done that you think will actually help these horrific problems we're discussing?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are some suicide programs mm-hmm. in place.
Okay.
And, but there, you know, I would say we need to do more.
Mm-hmm.
We need to do more. Again, not speaking as a committee member, speaking as a woman veteran who sees things, you know, in the field. Mm-hmm. I think we need to do more for suicide prevention. And we need to make sure that women veterans, you know, feel like the VA is their home, too.
Yeah.
A lot of times, women veterans, you know, there's 9 million or so veterans across the country, about 2 million women veterans, mm-hmm. and only, 500 plus thousand use the VA or register to the VA. So where are those other women veterans? Mm-hmm. Many of them don't even identify with being a woman veteran.
Yeah, and the VA actually just had to make a big transition not too long ago to start really putting services in place for women because it was traditionally a male-dominated kind of health care system. And they started saying, well, you know, we do need to have actually services for women. And it's an evolution, but that's something that really needs to be looked at much more seriously. And
absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had one question.
Yeah, and you know, we started back pushing on them in 1985. And telling them that they weren't listening. And do you know what they told us back then is you guys are less than 1% of the people that are even on our radar, so we don't care. They literally told us that.
Okay.
They said, you're less than 1% on our radar, and you're less than 5% in the military. And until your numbers get a lot bigger, we're not doing anything, and we're not putting a whole lot of budget towards you. And they said that in congressional hearings.
I was going to ask, was that a congressional hearing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then in 1992, when we finally got the Women Veterans Health Programs Act passed, they were like, well, you know, we're not going to put huge amounts of money behind this because you're only 6%. And I said, you know, this is going to come back. One of the senators at that time looked at me when I was testifying and said, what is it that you want? you know, one of those things. What is it you want?
Oh my God.
I literally, and I've got to be very careful with my language here.
Right.
And I said, we want the same blankety blank treatment the men get. Do we want the same blankety blank treatment the men get?
And they
were kind of taken aback.
I said,
I don't think you understand that we're not asking for anything special.
Exactly.
But at that time,
You've earned it.
Yeah. And at that time, there were literally only restrooms for women. And Octavia can speak to this.
Mm-hmm.
In the VA, there were
Dr.
no restrooms for women except outside the director's office.
Pardon me one second.
Outside the cafeteria.
Dr. Arnold had a question.
Yeah, it's more like a comment, too, because what you were talking about earlier, and, you know, the only way you can become promoted and you can advance and advance in your rank is that you're given the opportunities to demonstrate your capabilities, your skills, your talents. And, it gave me a sort of a flashback to one of the things. I'm a flight surgeon myself. I was in the Army for 26 years, Army National Guard. But there was one person that I did a physical on, and she was actually applying to become a helicopter pilot. So she had to go to school to get training. And they just kept, you know, delaying it. Finally, I went actually to Alabama because that's where I got my flight training. And I looked at the physical and I said, this is complete. What is the problem that's going on? And found out it was all the kinds of stuff from a unit. The command structure wasn't fulfilling their role and making sure she got it. So she became the first African-American Black Hawk helicopter pilot after she went through the training. Was very qualified, able to do that job. So I think it's really up to the commanders and the people in the structure, in the unit, to make sure people have access to opportunity.
Absolutely. And that's the same thing. I think that when we're looking at how do we deal with suicide, how do we deal with promotion, how do we deal with just structures that, I look at some of the things, you know, there's a spiritual that says, you know, so high I can't get over it, so high I can't get around it.
Yeah.
You know, we have to figure out what it's going to take to get around it, to get over it, to get under it. Because if we're going to have to work this hard, then we just have to keep fighting. And Octavia, one of the questions I would ask you is, what are the things that are different? Because we keep, and this is something that people don't want to listen to and they don't want to hear, which I did have, I saw this constructed by Melissa Bryant, who used to be with American Legion. I saw it constructed by Lucy Del Gaudio at the hearings last month before DOD. But I saw this constructed by a couple of different folks before the VA committee on the 10th. And one of the things they were saying, and Lindsay Church brought this up with the Minority Veterans of America, she said, you have to quit shoving the LGBTQ community, Black veterans, Hispanic veterans, and Native American veterans into the same programs that you make for white men, because they don't fit into those programs. So when you come up with programs for suicidology, you can't make them the same for everybody else. What do they need to look like for women and minority veterans?
Good point.
They do. That's true. Just like with military sexual trauma, some of those programs lump men and women together because they don't have enough psychologists or social workers to separate. And that just makes a lot of the women just say, I'm not doing this because I'm not comfortable in this environment. So that's one of the things that people feel, well, wait a minute, I don't have those same problems. I don't relate to what they're trying to do, so it affects me differently. Programs need to be set up based on my issues,
sure,
the things that apply to people that look like me, mm-hmm. people that go through the same things as me culturally, and recognize that. Okay. So, you know, one of the things I think, Diana, you may have mentioned it, that's what people want. It's like mm-hmm. when you say, what do you all want? It's a woman veteran, for instance, wants to walk into a VA and know that there's comprehensive health care for her in there. Mm-hmm. Not, mm-hmm. well, you know, we've got this over here for you, but everything else has to be out in the community. Mm-hmm. That's not really feeling inclusive. Yeah. And so it's great if you have that conduit to get your care, yeah. if you need it. So that's good. But
ladies, I hate we're having such a great conversation here.
Yes, yes.
But we're actually out of time. We have yeah. But we'll be getting back to you. You're giving us some great information, okay?
Yes.
Diana Dennis, yes. and also, of course, Octavia Harris of the Navy.
Thank you so much.
Yes. You are more than welcome.
Great information you provide.
Absolutely, great information. Now we want to...
And all of our veterans matter.
Bring forth our executive producer, Glenda Smith. Glenda, hi.
Good afternoon, or I should say good evening, everyone. And thank you to Diana, the beautiful Diana Dennis of Women Service, Women Who Serve. Thank you so much for your partnership. We greatly appreciate all our partners. Sister Soldier of She Serves, She Voices, She Vet Inspirer, all of the partners. Thank you so much. It is with heavy heart that we acknowledge a personal friend of mine, personally speaking, who's been like a brother to me since 1997, who took me under his wings at Rainbow Push, and who taught me, who mentored me, who guided me, who inspired me, Mr. Mark Allen, made his transition this morning. So I personally dedicate this show to him, from me to him, because I know what I know because of Mark. He taught me constituency service. He taught me get out the vote. He taught me grassroots community outreach. He taught me everything that I know in terms of understanding the foundation of politics. And so I just, to the family members of Mark Allen, I'm speechless. On another happy note, Mr. Cliff Kelly, Vietnam veteran, Dr. Damon Arnold, Iraqi veteran, combat medic, and the Honorable Congressman Danny Davis would like to extend an invitation for you all to come out, please, next Saturday, September 19th at 1 o'clock p.m. to join us in a press conference. You must have your PP on, your mask.
PPE,
and we are socially distancing for a press conference to ex-veterans to unite, regardless of political affiliation, to unite, to come out for a common cause of early voting. Get out the vote. Yeah. So we're asking you all to come out in unity to support Operation Restore Military Honor and Valor, because there are no suckers and losers who puts on that uniform and lace up their boots. It's a call to action on behalf of Mr. Cliff Kelly, on behalf of Dr. Damon Arnold, and Congressman Danny Davis. Please join us September 19th, 1 o'clock p.m. at the Harrison Post Office. Our PR public relations person is Ms. Delmarie Cobbs. She's the owner of the publicity work. You can call her at 773-373-3860 with any questions and concerns. Thank you all so much, as always, for listening, supporting America's Heroes Group.
And I really want to extend out to our Hispanic veterans, really well wishes for this Heritage Month again. And then also on the 16th, next Wednesday, is the day that they celebrate.
Yes.
This day, we should all be celebrating that. Our veterans are all one blood.
Yes.
That's right.
And so we want to support them. And thank you. And